You're listening to All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Time now, as we do before, just before the work week ends, each Friday afternoon, a review of the week in state politics. On the right is Mitch Kokai from the John Locke Foundation, and on the left, Rob Schofield of NC Policy Watch. That's part of the North Carolina Justice Center. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
This week, a plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, fizzled in the U.S. Senate. I'm wondering what impact, if any, do either of you think that this latest failed attempt in Washington has on North Carolina congressional members or even legislative members?
I'm not sure that it has much of an impact at this point on legislative members. You'd really have to have a stretch to try to tie what's happening in D.C. to what they're doing in North Carolina. Certainly it could have an impact on the members of Congress. I think on one side you have people who like the Affordable Care Act, or at least think the Affordable Care Act is preferable to anything the Republicans have come up with, and so they're going to be happy that it's in place. But you have on the other side people who for years and years have said to every Republican that they've talked to and wanted to put in office, repeal Obamacare. And they've all said, yes, we're going to repeal Obamacare. They haven't done it. And so I think there's going to be a lot of anger from people who have made that one of their real talking points on the right, that we have to repeal Obamacare. So how come you guys aren't doing it? And that could come back to haunt them.
And for progressives, I think they see it as an enormous victory, perhaps even sort of the Tea Party wave cresting and then falling back after that. We've seen that the facts still have some impact. They matter. The fact that millions and millions of people, hundreds of thousands in North Carolina, would have lost health insurance as a result of repeal, and there was no realistic prospect for getting them back into health insurance, made a big difference. And that's a similar argument to the argument that progressives are making on lots of other issues. So, I mean, you can't see it as anything but an enormous defeat for President Trump, for Senator McConnell, and I think that filters down to conservatives in North Carolina as well. They are going to be hard-pressed to – they're not going to be able to fulfill this promise they've made, and yet they're being pushed back by progressives who see the damage that their proposal would have done. So I think it's a tough time for the conservative movement.
There's been a lot of talk, a lot of attention, multiple efforts on this. Are we any closer, from your perspective, realizing you're not in the negotiating room, are we any closer to seeing a repeal and or a replacement for the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare?
I don't know that we are, and I think it signals that the process that the legislative leadership in Congress wanted to take to address this was flawed from the outset. One of the things they could have done was just at the top of the year said, okay, we've done this before, we're going to do it again. Here is our bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Put that forward, see what happens to it. And then if it didn't get through, which it could have gotten through the House potentially, but certainly would have run into a filibuster in the Senate, if they could not get that piece of legislation through, they could have said, all right, we tried it, it didn't work. Now let's go back to the table and come up with something else. Instead, from the very start of this, the leadership in both the House and the Senate said, okay, how could we get something through that we could tie to a budget bill so it can get 51 votes? We won't have to worry about the filibuster, but it can do some things and can't do other things, so we can't really have a full repeal. And it got lost in that noise, and the people who were really pushing them to repeal the Affordable Care Act were saying, wait a minute, just repeal it. And they were saying, well, but we can't do it. We got to do that. And so they got lost in the process. And I think that's been plaguing them throughout the entire journey of this discussion.
And I think they got lost in the fact that 30 million people would have lost their health insurance if we had simply repealed the Affordable Care Act. And so, you know, what might could happen out of this, the sort of fantasy scenario, is that the two sides actually sit down, that conservative Republicans sit down with Democrats. Democrats have from the outset said there's lots of flaws in the Affordable Care Act. There are things we need to fix and address. How about we do this together? I mean, that's the fantasy outcome. I'm still probably a bit of a long shot.
I appreciate your optimism. Healthcare, complicated, who knew? Meanwhile, redistricting. Governor Cooper made a pledge that if Democrats are in control of the legislature, which is a tall task, we should note, in 2020, then Democrats would turn over redistricting, map drawing, political boundaries to an independent entity. Cooper doesn't actually get to make this decision. That's one important stipulation off the top. Rob, what did you make of this? This was part of a conference, an event. Eric Holder, the former attorney general, was in Raleigh last weekend.
When I give talks around the state, the issue of redistricting is perhaps the one I get the most questions about. People are angry about gerrymandered districts. I think the folks who are the good government folks who have been arguing for a nonpartisan process have actually done a very good job of making it an important issue. It's a winning political issue. I think that's Cooper's perception of Democrats. Now, you know, there have been promises like this before. I think this is the first time a governor has really staked himself out like this. And so I'm hopeful that this could actually happen. I think it's smart politics, and it's, you know, in the past, the Republicans had promised to do this and sponsored bills for nonpartisan redistricting, and then when they got in power, they didn't do it. This would really be the acid test if the Democrats could somehow take charge in 2020.
Mitch?
It's great to hear Governor Cooper say that he would be committed to that, but as you pointed out, this is something that is not in his hands, and in fact, something that he forgot when he called the special session on redistricting is that the governor constitutionally has absolutely no role in the drawing of districts. And so it would be very interesting to see if Democrats did end up winning control either in the next round of elections or by 2020, if they would follow through or if they would, as their Republican counterparts said, hey, you know, we kind of like having this power. Let's keep it and try to make sure that we keep it for the next decade.
We don't normally pull out the crystal ball here, but briefly, do you think it's more likely that Republicans, if they are seeing the writing on the wall and perhaps going to lose power in 2020, would turn over redistricting to an independent commission in 2019, or that Democrats may follow through on this in 2021? No, and those are not the only two possibilities, but Republicans in 19 or Democrats in 21. Do you have a thought on what's more likely when it comes to...
You know, I've heard that before, but I really don't think that Republicans think they're going to lose.
It's a potential that Republicans, enough Republicans, will have remembered being in the minority, that they will say, look, let's make sure that we don't hurt ourselves. But Rob could be right that they say, look, we're going to win. We're always going to win, which is what the Democrats thought when they controlled the Senate for 140 years. We're always going to win. These Republicans are never going to win. And so that would blind them.
Finally, what are you reading this summer? A political literary recommendation.
Well, among political books, because I'm reading some stuff that has nothing to do with politics because you want to take your mind off this stuff. But I have just recently started Craig Shirley's book, Reagan Rising, which is an interesting book about the so-called wilderness years for Ronald Reagan after he lost in 1976 to Gerald Ford and was preparing for his run against Jimmy Carter in 1980. What was he up to? And I've just started it, but the book jacket promises that it shows how not only did Reagan sort of lay the groundwork for winning in 1980, but he also changed his ideas on some things, too. So it'll be interesting.
I bought a book. Actually, we're having a luncheon next Wednesday, NC Policy Watch in Raleigh, with Professor Nancy McLean of Duke University, who's written a new book called Democracy in Chains, which is about the rise of the hard right in America and the Koch brothers and some of their allies and what they have planned for our country and how far they really want to take this conservative revolution. And we're very anxious to hear Nancy's talk about it next Wednesday, and I think I'm going to enjoy the book.
Rob Schofield is with the North Carolina Justice Center. Mitch Kokai is from the John Locke Foundation. Thank you both.
Thanks,
Jeff. Thank you, Jeff.